Moncrief on News Talk.
While we like to think that we have an international cuisine in this country, curries and pasta, for instance, in a lot of instances, those foods don't come from where we think they do. Dr. Marcin McInimara is chair of the Masters in Gastronomy and Food Studies at TU Dublin. Marcin, good afternoon.
How are you, Sean?
Could you start by explaining what is the Colombian Exchange?
Well, the Colombian Exchange is really an exchange of foods from the New World to the Old World. And again, it's called the Colombian Exchange because, as I say, Christopher Columbus landed in Hispaniola, which is modern-day Haiti, around 1492, and brought these new foods back to Europe. And from Europe, they spread all the way through the East. So there's a lot of foods that we use every day, you know, things like potatoes and maize and tomatoes and even peppers, capsicums, peanuts, all that sort of stuff that we never had in Europe or in the East before Columbus landed in the Americas.
Right. OK. Quinine. What is quinine first and how did that affect things?
Well, quinine is very interesting because quinine actually comes from the New World as well. It comes from around the Andes and it comes from the bark of a tree. It's from a specific tree called, I think, the Chincong tree. But they found out, and they didn't find this out until, I think it was around 1841, that a doctor called Dr. Thompson discovered actually that quinine had a medicinal cure for malaria. And because of this, then the British government worked with the Royal Society and Kew Gardens and planted these trees in their botanical gardens. They then started to plant them in India and Singapore and places like that. And it came by the 1880s, they were able to produce enough quinine to actually for 10 million people to have a daily dose of quinine, which would protect them against malaria. So this enabled effectively the rush for Africa, which happened from the 1880s onwards. And by 1914, there was only two countries in Africa that weren't under European control, and that was Ethiopia and Liberia. So when you're having your gin and tonic, be thinking about European colonialism and they were drinking these sort of quinine tonic in their gins to protect them from malaria.
Yeah, but because even today, if you buy a tonic, it says it has quinine in it. Is it, if you're a gin drinker, are you more prone to malaria bites or something? Why is it in there?
Well, it's in there because it's linked in, as in literally it was a tonic. So when something's called a tonic, it's normally sort of medicinal. And it was in there for a reason because it's linked in with protecting from malaria. And an interesting about malaria, because remember even when they were building the Panama Canal, you know, there was such malaria in the area that they had to bring in African slaves who were from parts of Africa that had natural immunity to malaria to actually do most of the physical work because that the Europeans couldn't survive in it.
Right. That's fascinating. While also absolutely horrific. So you mentioned among some of the foods that the Colombian Exchange brought back to Europe, tomatoes. Was that one variety of tomatoes? The way that we have so many different sorts of tomatoes now, was that developed in Europe or did they come from and the other part of the world?
Well, it's interesting you say that because the first, you know, the first Italian name or the first name sort of for tomatoes in Europe was the pomodoro. And even in Italian, they call them a pomodoro, which basically means golden apples, you know. So which means the first type of tomatoes that would have arrived would have been yellow and not red. You know, it's hard to think today about, you know, the food of Spain or Italy or the Mediterranean without tomatoes. You know, there was sort of a pre-Columbian gazpacho in Spain that was made out of almonds and grapes and garlic. But the key thing about tomatoes is that really it's not until the mechanization of the canning industry in the early 20th century that led tomatoes becoming so widespread because they would have gone off, particularly in warm climates, you know. But with the canning industry, they were able to preserve them when they're at their peak and spread them and save them and all that sort of stuff. And they've really, like, today Greece is the highest per capita consumers of tomatoes in Europe, believe it or not.
Oh, right. And I suppose by the same token, pasta, again, something we'd associate exclusively with Italy. Were there people eating pasta or something like pasta before the Italians?
Absolutely. You know, wherever you have, like, pasta is made from wheat, you know, like durum wheat is what they normally make the pasta from. But anywhere where wheat was being grown, like, there is a school of thought that actually the Italians learned about pasta from the Chinese, you know, who make their noodles. You know what I mean? Huh. So noodles is basically a form of pasta. And even in French cuisine, they don't call pasta pasta, they call it nouilles, you know what I mean, from noodle paste. But all of these... whether it's the potatoes, you know, that we came to Ireland, you know, cassavas that came to Africa, you know, and is such a staple, maize that is such a staple all around Africa, you know, in places like Lesotho, Malawi, Zambia. Actually, as part of the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage, they have this thing called shima, which is a mealy meal made from maize, you know, protected for Malawi and for other African countries. Yet all of these foods came from the New World, but also we gave them things. So the exchange is, you started off with the Columbian Exchange. The exchange went both ways, but unfortunately, what we gave them was mostly disease. So even though, yes, we did give them wheat and barley, and we did give them cows and sheep and all that sort of stuff, but we also gave them smallpox and measles and typhoid and cholera, you know. So it is said that something like 95% of the indigenous American population were wiped out within 150 years of Columbus landing in 1492.
Good grief. Potatoes, obviously, central to the, still central, I suppose, to the Irish diet. Did that, again, when that was originally brought back, were there varieties of potato brought back?
Totally. And what's interesting, like the potatoes, there's hundreds of varieties in, like, potatoes originally came from the Peruvian Andes, and there are hundreds of different varieties of them. Now, what's interesting about these New World foods is that when they came to the Old World, that they, in some ways, they actually complemented our foods. They didn't necessarily compete with our foods. They sort of complemented our foods in that they sort of grew in soils that maybe our foods wouldn't grow in before, or at times, or else sometimes in you know, this idea about the, you might have learned it in school in geography, about the three-field rotation system, you know, where quite often a field would have been left sort of barren for 1 year, you know, so as to let the nutrients come back. Well, one of the things they found in Ireland is where they were growing, you know, wheat and barley, that by actually every, you know, once every 3 years, if you grew potatoes in that field, it would actually add nourishment and vitamins back into the, you know, or not vitamins, but minerals and all that sort of stuff back into the soil. And so that it was a sort of a cleansing, rotating crop. And not just that, but then it provided, you know, sufficient food for the intense labor required for arable production. So this is when you're growing wheat and barley before tractors and combine harvesters and all that sort of stuff, where it was all have to be done by hand. And there's a direct correlation between the population of Ireland, because, like, the potato arrived in around, say, the 1590s or so, and we had 1.1 million people here. And by 1841, when the census was taken, just before the eve of the Great Irish Famine, we had around 8.4 million people. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, what you call it, we've recently, you know, published a book about the history of Irish food, and I have a chapter in it called 72 Words for Potato, and I discuss an Irish language triad called Tuscar, Prati, Poshti. And what the Tuscar is that it's cast up seaweed. And then the Prati is the potatoes, and then the Poshti is the children. Because there's a direct link between harvesting seaweed that had been cast up in times of big, you know, storms and stuff like that. Or time, like at the moment, you know, with these big high tides at the moment, and they throw seaweed up onto the foreshore. People used to harvest that, used it to fertilize their potato crops. And when they had good, fertile crops, they had plenty of fecundity, plenty of children, and the population grew.
That's fascinating. Is this kind of an ongoing process to a degree? I mean, hopefully not us sending diseases to other parts of the world, but new foods arriving in our supermarkets, like, for instance, quinoa. That seems to be a relatively recent thing.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about that is that when the Europeans arrived in South America, they had no respect for quinoa at all. And they were trying to actually get the indigenous people to stop growing it, you know, so they could grow their stuff. And, you know, because this superfood, quinoa, has been traditionally grown in Bolivia and Peru for over 5,000 years. But its recent popularity amongst vegans and celiacs you know, means that its production has grown 40 times larger in Bolivia since the year 2000. But the rush to produce more quinoa more quickly has changed the traditional land management systems in Bolivia, a danger to the fragile ecosystems of the region. Now, you know, important to the growing of quinoa, the seeds were traditionally planted in fields where llamas had been grazing, and the natural manure from the, you know, from the llamas helped to nourish it. Whereas high quinoa demand now means that they're using artificial manure, and they're sort of not rotating things correctly, and the soil health is being depleted as a result.
Dr. Martin McAnimara is chair of the Masters in Gastronomy and Food Studies at TU Dublin and co-editor, as you mentioned, of Irish Food History, a Companion. Martin, thank you very much.
And Sean, can I just say one thing, that the book is actually freely available, open access, thanks to EUT Plus Press. So anyone who wants to look at it can just Google it and get access to it for free, or they can go and buy it in the shop.
Okay, excellent stuff. Martin, thanks a million.
Gorda Margaret.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.